This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we roll along this morning. And a good Friday to you, getting you into the weekend, a weekend that will see the start of the NBA playoffs. The NHL Stanley Cup playoffs are going to be next week. Boston, the number one seed, the Bruins. We've been telling you this for the last couple weeks. The Bruins had a historic season. They finished with 135 points, 65 wins, both their new NHL records as they head into the playoffs as the number one seed. One other hockey note, the Chicago Blackhawks said goodbye to Jonathan Toews last night, their longtime captain. He was drafted by the Blackhawks in 2006 as a young kid, like they all are, and was made a captain almost immediately. I think he was 20 when he became captain of the Blackhawks. But he's going to be 35 at the end of this month, and the team decided, you know, we're going in another direction. We traded Patrick Kane. We're going in another direction. We're not going to sign Jonathan Toews. So he knows that he's not going to be a Blackhawk going into this offseason. He's going to be a free agent. So last night was the final game of his Blackhawk career. And he scored a goal last night. It was really emotional because he's a guy that helped bring the Blackhawks 3 Stanley Cup championships. And it's like we say this a lot, that sometimes in sports you don't get the curtain call. You know, sometimes you don't know until you know that it's going to be your final time. And sometimes sports can be cruel in that way. And sometimes you see athletes sensing it, and they can read the tea leaves a little bit, and they can know. In this case, it's not a retirement. You know, Jonathan Toews is going to want to continue to play hockey. He's going to continue to wanting to sign with somebody. But he also knew that it was very unlikely that a team that was rebuilding that was going to keep him. So he knew that this day was coming. He said afterwards, you know, there was no regrets, that he was going to, that he understands it. That's the nature of this business, is that sometimes in the end you have to say goodbye to certain players for the right reasons. There were a number of reasons, for example, why the Edmonton Oilers traded Wayne Gretzky. A lot of it had to do with money, you know, just getting money. But they also could see how he was helping them win, but they had to go in another direction because financially they needed, you know, economic support, but they also were looking at other pieces. It really can be a tough business. I can remember when there was a player, Eric Lindros. Remember Eric Lindros? If you remember hockey from the late 80s, early 90s, remember him?
Flyers.
Well, he was a Canadian megastar when he was a youth hockey player. And the Quebec Nordiques had the number one pick. And he told them he wasn't going to play for them, kind of like Eli Manning did with the Chargers. He said, don't draft me. I won't play for you. I won't play for you. And they basically said, oh, no, you will. You'll play for us. You know, he said, no, I won't. I won't. If you draft me, I won't. And he ended up going to Philadelphia. But in return, Quebec got a lot of pieces to build around. And while unfortunately for the people of Quebec, they never saw it come to fruition, the people in Denver saw it come to fruition when the Quebec Nordiques moved to Colorado and won the Stanley Cup the year they moved to Colorado. So sometimes these things where you think they don't work out, they can work out. I mean, they ended up with Peter Forsberg. I think they got Joe Sakic as part of that deal. And, of course, they ended up trading and getting Patrick Waugh. So there was a number of other components that led to that. But that sometimes can happen. The Edmonton Oilers, for example, they were back in the Cup Finals. They didn't go nowhere without Wayne Gretzky. They went right back to the Cup Finals. So they still had enough pieces on that team, even with Gretzky playing in Los Angeles, to still be a championship contending team. But Jonathan Toews was an important part of the Blackhawks' success, and I think it's very similar to Sidney Crosby in a way. Sidney Crosby, the Penguins just got eliminated from playoff contention after 16 straight years of going to the playoffs. That's a huge run. It's a huge run. And Sidney Crosby was part of a team that, again, that led to, I think, 3 championships as well. And you have these moments with a player. But while Sidney Crosby is going to play for the Penguins, one day that might not happen. One day the Penguins might have to go, 39-year-old Sidney Crosby, we're not bringing you back. But Taves at 35 is done. So I thought I'd bring that up. Even though we don't do a lot of hockey on this show, I say it all the time, I'm more of a big picture guy, and this was a pretty big picture for the people of Chicago to see one of the guys that helped bring parades to Chicago. No matter who you are, you bring a parade to the city, you help bring a parade to the city. You're a very important part of that team's, that city's sports culture. Jonathan Taves is part of that. Helped them win two cups. Remember the cup victory they won? I loved their win in, I want to say 2010, I think it was, when they beat the Flyers. And they did it with a goal by Patrick Kane in overtime, in which Patrick Kane was the only one that knew he scored. It's one of the wildest goals.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, remember that
Mike Emmerich didn't even know the puck had crossed the line, but Patrick Kane knew the puck had crossed the line, and Emmerich reacted to Kane's reaction, and everybody was kind of standing around going, "What are you doing?" He slips it through. Nobody does anything. And he's throwing the stick in the air, screaming and hollering. He knows it's a goal. And finally, his teammates are like, I guess we just won the cup. And they start celebrating with him.
If not, that's a great way to end a game.
Right? Exactly. Let's just make it so that it's like, you know, it's kind of like the Immaculate Reception, right? Is there anybody that can get us out of this stadium? No, click. All right, it's a touchdown. Like, seriously, like. You see this in basketball, too, where somebody presses the celebration button a little too early, and the referees are like, whoa, we got to see before everybody goes nuts. Hold on. And they're like, no, too late. It's like we got confetti all over the place. We're celebrating the win. You're like, no, we got to, no, never mind. You got the shot off. It's good. So, yeah, but that was the Blackhawks game last night as the season. The season actually ends tonight with two games on the card. But then the Stanley Cup playoffs start. And I don't think anybody's beating Boston. So pay attention to the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs. Just if you hear rumblings of, holy cow, the Bruins are down 2-1, maybe then you'll focus in on the Stanley. That Boston team is so, so good. So good. It is really going to be a monumental upset if they were to lose in the playoffs before the Stanley Cup finals. Now, my question is if you are a juggernaut team, and you get to the finals but lose the finals, is that considered still an upset? Or do they go, well, you are playing the best team that the other conference found? Or is it? Or can you say, oh, wow. Because if the Bruins lose in round one, it's going to be one of the greatest upsets in sports. Like for a record-setting team to win by that, to not only win by like what they did, but to accumulate all those points and wins. If the Florida Panthers knocked them off in round one, we'd be like, oh, my God. Round two, yeah. Conference finals, yeah. NHL Stanley Cup finals, I don't know. Like, if they played a Vegas team that's really good or a Colorado team that's really good, Dallas is actually really good. If they lose in a 7-game series to any one of those teams, I don't know if we would say, oh, that was a big upset. It's not Villanova-Georgetown. It's like these teams found their way to the finals.
But, you know, hockey fan might, though.
Yeah, hockey fan might.
Because, I mean, you and I and everyone else like us wouldn't know. I don't know. I read something today that I found interesting relating to hockey is that this will be the first time since the invention of the iPhone that Connor McDavid and Alex Ovechkin aren't in the playoffs.
Oh, very interesting. All right.
If you had told me that those two superstars are.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Sorry, I had a sneeze.
No, I was going to say, I heard you disappear there for a second.
Yeah, no, you only have one of those sneezes that's coming, and it's like, oh, this is going to be huge, and there's no stopping it. But I had no clue that, you know, I mean, first of all, I figured those two were still playing because I hadn't heard anything about a retirement out of any one of those. But no clue that their teams weren't doing that well this year.
The Penguins were eliminated on Wednesday night when the Islanders beat Montreal to claim the final wild card series. That was the Penguins were a point behind the Islanders. They played last night. I think they won, but it didn't matter.
And the Capitals were
and the Capitals
were out weeks ago.
Yeah, the Capitals really had nothing. They didn't play particularly well this year.
So they because you know for me that. honestly, that was the last Stanley Cup winner that I can really remember because of how much they celebrate, especially Ovechkin, how much he celebrated.
Yeah, exactly.
But I don't even remember who won last year. I don't know if that's a good thing for the
Colorado?
NHL.
Colorado? You don't remember Colorado winning the
Was
Cup?
That last year?
Yeah, it was last year.
The year before that was St. Louis, right? Because that was Hey Gloria.
Nope. No, that was 2019.
Jeez.
See, I got you. Don't worry. I got you. I'm keeping it up. Tampa Bay Lightning.
That's
won,
you know what? Yeah,
back-to-back
not, you know what?
Cups, I think.
You know, this is sad. I remember St. Louis winning because of Gloria.
Right.
And now when you mentioned
Colorado.
And you mentioned Colorado. I was like, I do remember that because of it's all the small things.
Huh. That's so you need a hit
I need
song.
I need them to have a song.
So you whoever you need the Bruins to have a tune so when they win the cup you'll remember. I remember the Boston Bruins winning the cup because Maggie May was their song from Rod Stewart's Maggie May. I don't know if that's a good hockey song.
I don't think it's a good hockey song.
Wake
at
up,
all.
Maggie. No, that's not a good hockey song. But
I think they need
the
a Boston artist. They need something by Aerosmith.
How about Aerosmith? Sweet Emotion.
Yeah.
You were like, they had Sweet Emotion playing, and I remember them winning the cup.
I remember Steven Tyler singing it before Stanley Cup Game 3.
By the way, everybody knows Aerosmith as the Bad Boys of Boston, but we know them as the guys from New Hampshire. So just letting people know. They went to the high. They all went to a high school that was about 15 minutes from my house. And that high school used to kind of brag that they had Steven Tyler and one other guy went to that high school from Aerosmith. So, nevertheless, congratulations to the Bruins, though, on a fantastic season. All right, Good, the Bad, and the Dumb is coming up. Then we'll get back to the NFL with the draft coming up in 2 weeks and more on the Daniel Snyder situation in Washington, what it could mean.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What a... idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Your Friday edition of the Good, the Bad, and the Dumb with the NBA playoffs starting this weekend with Major League Baseball, the Rays are 13-0. The NFL draft is 2 weeks away. What else could be good? Well, let's get it. The good of the day here on Friday.
Well, I'll be quite honest with you. Many people across this great country won't find this good.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Some people will, though.
I kind of do. I think you will, especially the great people of New York.
Okay.
New York City, because in New York City, these teams are putting back. If you can make it here, you can make it anywhere, and that's for the first time since 1994, 29 years ago. Tony,
wow.
The Knicks, Nets, Islanders, and Rangers are all in the playoffs
time. Well done. Yeah, it took a while, but we got them all in the playoffs.
It seems kind of strange, though, to say that it's nearly 30 years for those four teams to be in the playoffs at the same time.
Which one is the biggest culprit? Is it the Knicks?
I would say it's
the Knicks made the playoffs with Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, but I mean, the Nets weren't good then.
No, the Nets weren't that good.
I mean, for me, honestly, this season it's the Nets the Nets are the surprising one. No, the Islanders have been there.
They've been good.
Didn't they have a Stanley Cup run?
The Rangers have been in the playoffs almost every year. The Rangers were just in the Stanley Cup finals.
Okay, no, it was the Rangers I was thinking about.
Yeah, no, the Rangers they've been really good.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It might be the Knicks. Like, the Knicks might have been the one that spoiled the party because while they'll go every now and then, they weren't a consistent presence in the playoffs.
No, but I mean, I think it was the Nets early on.
Nets.
And then the Nets kind of gave way to, you know, the Knicks being terrible and the Nets being good. I think it was those two teams at the same time couldn't keep it straight.
Well done, hockey, basketball teams in New York.
Yeah.
In the greater New York City area?
For the first time ever, or not ever, but first time in 30 years.
I need a hockey guy to come on and, well, I wouldn't
we're
ask
going,
him this
we're
on
going
the show.
To. We're going to do that.
I won't ask him this on the show, though, because I think it would be a kind of a one. It would be a question that would divert from what I would want, which is NHL. But I heard rumors that the Islanders were leaving Nassau Coliseum on the island to go to Brooklyn. They were going to be part of, like, the Brooklyn Nets, Islanders, Barclays Center thing, right? There was all this – there was even a logo, like Brooklyn Hockey, Brooklyn – but they never did. They stayed on the island, I think. I think they did some of their games in Brooklyn, but now I don't think they do them at all. I think they might – so I don't follow it enough, but I remember hearing that it was going to be, like, the Knicks and Rangers, Islanders and Nets over in Brooklyn. But I don't think that came to fruition. But, hey, good for New York. Good for the people of New York. And that, you know what? That's a lot of back page sports. That's a lot of following sports. I mean, I think we're a far cry from the, like, 1994 when the Rangers and the Knicks were both competing in the championships.
Right.
And that city was on fire for both teams, especially the Rangers, with Mark Messier guaranteeing victories and John Starks clanging it every time he had the ball against the Rockets in Game 7. So, yeah, we're a far cry from that, but we're at least, you know. At least.
But is that 94 NBA Finals more known for something else?
Yeah, the non-Michael Jordan in there?
Well, no, I was going to say O.J.
Simpson. Yeah, I'm sorry. O.J.
Simpson, the high-speed chase.
Exactly, exactly.
I know.
Yeah. Clang, clang, clang went the title. I will never forget that headline by the New York Post or the Daily News. I can't remember which one. Just showed a picture of John Starks. John Starks shot.
I think it's the Post. Post usually
Post
has
Post probably had it, yeah.
They usually had the good headline, the
clang,
colorful.
Clang, clang, went the title. God, just a picture of John Starks. I forget what his stats were at the end of that game, but bang, blang, 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 nothing. I remember arguing with a friend of mine. My friend said, man, we were young, you know, because I was right out of college. And you're like, shooter's got to shoot. I'm like, not if you keep missing all night. You have to pass the ball. There's got to be a point where you go, you know what? I don't have it this evening. So you might have it. So I'm going to give the ball to you. I can't seem to make a shot. All right. What is the bad of the day?
The bad of the day. I think we all can relate to this. I found it funny.
Okay.
Because the wheel on Wheel of Fortune.
Yes.
Did not like one of the contestants. Really hated one of the contestants. This guy named Justin, who is a school principal from Kansas City. You ready to hear his spins in order?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Spin number one, bankrupt.
Uh-huh.
Spin number two, bankrupt.
Ooh.
Spin number three, lose a turn.
Ooh.
Spin number four, bankrupt.
Ooh.
Spin number five, lose a turn.
Uh-oh.
Then it came to the final, you know, you could do the final spin. You know, it's a triple toss up or whatever. So the final spin of the game and whatever money they add more money to it. And that's it. That's all you get to play for. Right.
Right.
There's no more spinning. So they had him spin it. His first spin was bankrupt.
Oh my God.
And Pat Sajak like, do you want to just spin it again and see what happens? And he spun it again. He finally landed on a dollar amount.
Oh, thank God.
But it just, I feel
horrible.
Bad. I mean, the guy never really got a chance to play.
How hard is it to get on these game shows? It's virtually impossible to get on these game shows. And when you do, that's what the fates have given you?
And it wasn't, he's just, you know, he's putting his hand down there, giving the wheel a tug. I mean, there was nothing. I mean, it wasn't like, you can't try to get a bankrupt or lose a turn. Especially seven times in a row to not hit a dollar amount of any kind whatsoever.
I would love to spin that wheel in some capacity. I'd love to.
Yeah.
There's two
wheels. That one, and I would love to spin the Price is Right
wheel. Price is Right wheel. I want to know how heavy
it
is. The Wheel of Fortune, they always look like they're really giving it gusto. Like they really are whipping that thing as hard as they can. And I'm thinking, I don't know if it's heavy. It doesn't seem like it would be. Like, you would make it that.
Well,
I
think the same with the Price is Right, because if you ever have, like, a short person, like, and yeah, I mean, no, I'm not trying to be sexist or anything, but it was like, a lot of times it's a short female who jumps up to grab the wheel.
To grab the wheel. You know what? Can I just throw this out there for Michael? Because Michael's our engineering guy that helps us with engineering. I would assume the wheel on the Price is Right is easier to spin based on gravity.
Yes.
Right? Where, like, once you get the momentum, like, you get it down, the wheel just rotates with gravity. But the wheel that's flat on the ground, that's got to be harder to spin it around.
Right. No, I agree.
You know what I mean? But, Michael, if you are listening, you want to help us out with the physics of that. I'm sure we're right, but we may not be. But I would love to take a, even not even on the show. Like if they said, hey, you want to take a tour of the set and spin the wheel? Yes.
Yes, I would.
Let me spin that wheel. Let me just get a Wheel of Fortune wheel.
Yeah.
All right. What's
do
the
they add the clapping laugh clapping track in the background?
I want the noise though.
I want the clapping.
Hey, 500. What's the dumb?
The guy bankrupt.
What's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is it's a more relatable story of the year, Tony, because I know you've probably came close to this from time to time, but two people ended up in the hospital.
Uh-oh.
Due to a long game of Monopoly, because the game of Monopoly broke out into a sword fight.
It broke out into a sword fight?
Sword fight. So, as one can imagine, when you're playing Monopoly, I don't know what time the game started, but around 5 a.m. in the morning, a sword fight broke out. This took place in Brussels, Belgium.
So, they got in an argument?
Probably over, who knows? I mean, if you try to figure out an argument in Monopoly, like where an argument started, it was probably because you were playing Monopoly in the first place.
There was, in my life as a dad, there was nothing worse than when my son wanted to play Monopoly.
Right.
I would play anything else.
Oh, we'll say no.
He jokes about it to this day as an obnoxious 21-year-old. Like, hey, remember when we used to play Monopoly and I used to go on for hours? Uh-huh, I do.
Yeah.
I remember being in that sitting at a table going, Park Place, who's got it? New York Avenue, has anybody got it? I'll buy it. Just forever and ever and ever and ever. Yeah. Nobody really likes playing it, but everybody plays it. It's a weird thing.
No,
I never
that's
met anybody
thing.
Who says, oh, I love Monopoly.
See,
I will say this.
Playing it. There, we had a Star Wars Monopoly game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? And I honestly don't know if I read the rules correctly, but I think I did. And we ended those games all the time. They put a clause in there, something in there where you can end it. Once all the properties were bought, you're pretty much done.
Yeah, right.
You know, in regular Monopoly, it feels like you just keep going until you literally bankrupt somebody else.
Look, and I love playing Clue. Like, I love Clue. Clue, I love it. I love the detective game. I love other games.
Yeah.
When my son would go, Monopoly, I'd go, oh, God, please. And we did everything. We did all sorts of additions. We did the one where it had the credit card. You know,
Yep. We've
had all those versions. And they all stink. They're all long and boring. But I did it.
There's
That's
a version
enough.
Where
on the table.
Cheaters win.
Yeah, I would say to him, set it up and then let me know when it's set up. Like you put out the money to everybody and I'll go and land.
Yeah.
But yeah, no.
But no, but it's
not
a, it's
surprising.
It's a relatable thing.
It is.
That
you're
a Monopoly
right.
game it ended in a sword fight.
100%. We'll continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we opened up the show in hour number one talking about Dan Snyder and the Washington Commanders. There's a bid of $6 billion, a little over $6 billion, made by Josh Harris and his finance group. He also owns part of the New Jersey Devils, the Philadelphia 76ers. He owns one of the soccer teams over in England, the Crystal Palace. So he is likely to win this bid, although there is another bid out there. But it looks like Dan Snyder is going to be selling this team. Magic Johnson is also part of that group. And it would put to an end this ownership of Dan Snyder and the Washington Commanders that has not been good for 25 years, 24 years. And again, as I said earlier, in hour one this morning, if you go back to the summer of 2020, when we were in this COVID world of sports sort of shutting down and the conversation of sports coming back and how would it look? Remember at the time in 2020, college football was like the Big Ten was canceling its season and then the SEC was like, well, we're not. And then there was all sorts of conversations of the Disney bubble and everything along those lines. And one of the big stories that was coming out in the summer of 2020, when the only thing we had were stories like this. So the only things that we were talking about in 2020, in the summer of 2020, was the resumption of play, what it would look like, battles between players' unions and owners on the resumption of play, if anybody was making a trade or anybody making a coaching change, whatever. Those were the only stories. And the big one coming in the summer of 2020 was this bombshell report in the Washington Post that they promised would shake the Washington Commanders to the core. And it was, I mean, it was teased for, I think, 2 days. And there was a lot of speculation on what it would be. Dan Snyder's getting arrested, right? It was like he sold the team, or he's being voted out. Like, it was all of these sort of speculation of what it was. And then when it was the sexual harassment allegations that came out, it wasn't that it was disappointing. Those things, that wasn't the case at all. People thought, though, that it was going to be something that was going to be affecting the on-field product. But it still was a big story. And now when you look back 3 years later, it was the start of something gigantic. It was the start of the process in which the NFL was looking into the team. So it ended up being exactly what they told people it was going to be, right? And again, that's not to make light of sexual harassment in the workplace and a toxic workplace environment. Those are big stories. But there was something else, and I think there was just an expectation that it was going to be Y when it was Z. They're still important letters, but we thought it would go in this direction, and it ended up being more of an off-the-field thing with Washington that was important, but it didn't affect who the starting quarterback was going to be or who the coach was going to be or whatever. But it ended up being exactly what it was. It just took a while. But when the investigation started coming, when things were starting to get revealed, when he went on the yacht and disappeared, when he was told to testify and he did, and then didn't answer the questions properly and didn't have answers to questions that people knew he knew the answer to, where he said, oh, I don't really know about that. And then there was emails to show that he knew exactly what some of these situations were. And he was paying off people for claims of sexual harassment. He paid one lady $1.6 million at one point. It was a whole bunch of things that were going on, and we were starting to get a real understanding that it wasn't just a bunch of women being uncomfortable in the workplace. It was a number of people in that workforce, in that workplace, that was feeling that the organization was run in a really bad way, and the league finally started to get, the cracks were starting to come within the, not only the NFL, but the Washington Commanders. Remember, John Gruden's lawsuit against the league for leaking his text is sort of based on the idea that the NFL was protecting the Commanders because they wanted to deflect attention away from some of the stuff that they were finding. So they never really came out and said, oh my God, it's all, but the owners started to know, and the owners started to speak freely, right? There's this sort of thought in Hollywood, whenever you see certain powerful people. I remember somebody made a point about this with Mel Gibson. Remember when Mel Gibson was in a lot of hot water, and a lot of smaller actors, not as powerful as Mel Gibson, were speaking out against Mel Gibson publicly. Now, Mel Gibson was producing movies and he carried a lot of clout. But when he went on his anti-Semitic rant, all of a sudden there were people that were on the lower end of, you know, guys who were still, even though they were in movies, they were not A actors. They were speaking out publicly against Mel Gibson. And there was a belief, I think it was the comedian Patrice O'Neill that one time said in one of his acts, that when you have these, when you have this level, it's because they got permission. Right. It's like they were told by the real powers behind the scenes, you now have permission to do this. Like, you have permission to go after Mel Gibson, even though you're nowhere near the power that Mel Gibson had in Hollywood. Take that same analogy and throw it into what we see in the NFL. Now, no one's more powerful than Dan Snyder, but the overall collective, when you're Jim Irsay, you would never speak about another owner unless you felt like it was okay to do so. Never. I don't care how bad Dan Snyder is. Because as much as you despise a guy across the room from you, you protect the collective. That to me was the signs that there was. When I say permission, I don't mean like Roger Goodell got on the phone with everybody and said, now you can speak publicly. But an overall feeling like amongst my peers, I'm going to be okay if I say some things bad about Dan Snyder and wanting him removed from our club. Whereas other owners might have said, Yeah, I'm not really sure we're at that point because, again, we all try to protect each other because I may need you to do something for me and or I might need you to protect me if I get in trouble or if the league wants me removed for whatever reason and they're drumming up some charges that are nowhere near this or I want to relocate my team and I need you to vote on it. Ursay's publicly coming out and saying we probably should get rid of him. Was a signal that something was okay with the other owners being able to do this. Now, other owners may have just said, listen, I don't speak in the spotlight anyway. I don't get to the media anyway, but I'm not really doing this. Right? And once that happened, it was a matter of time. And then what happened after that? Because that happened over the fall. What happened after that? You started seeing Dan Snyder and Tanya Snyder going to Bank of America and putting together a exploratory sell the team kind of inquiry. It was starting to come out that they were going to start taking bids. And then while nothing was finalized, they were looking at how much could they get for this team. And that's when it all started to come around. Now, the news yesterday, and I said this in hour one, the news yesterday is not the definitive, he's now selling this team to Josh Harris. There's still a number of things that have to take place before ownership is transferred. So first, there's a Canadian billionaire that is still in the running, according to ESPN, who's still in the running, although most major outlets this morning are just basically conceding that Josh Harris is going to be the winning bid. But that means he still has to be voted on. Now, nobody believes he will not be voted in. If he's got the funds, if he's got the capital, and if his group can, you know, if they're $6.2 billion liquid, they're going to get this team. There's an urgency on the league's part to get Dan Snyder out of this league, and they're also putting in somebody that's got experience at being an owner of a sports team, and that's kind of what you want. It is a different business.
And it's a couple of
right?
them.
Yeah, it's a couple of them.
Yeah, I mean, the couple of people I've heard who are part of this group. I mean, Magic Johnson does have experience running teams.
Yep.
You know, albeit not successfully at times, but he does have and I believe Tillman Fertitta might be in this grouping as well.
Yeah, and he knows. This. It's a different business than running. Like that's my there's a concern. Some of my friends were concerned about the Walmart purchase, the Waltons, or was it Robert Walton? Because they were like, look, I know he's rich, I know he's wealthy, but that doesn't mean he's gonna spend it. Like, it doesn't mean he's going to do what you have to do with the team. Well, he showed immediately, he signed Russell Wilson to the big deal, which at the time seemed like a good idea because we thought Russell Wilson was going to be great. But just because an owner's got a lot of money, it doesn't mean they're giving it away. It doesn't mean they're willing to do it. But he was willing to pay off Nathaniel Hackett. They were willing to say, yeah, you know, even though that's not our deal, even though we didn't sign Nathaniel Hackett, we didn't agree to him. We inherited him, and we're letting him go, and we'll pay off his contract.
Just real quick, I was mistaken. Tillman Fertitta threw in his own bid.
Oh, he threw in his own bid?
Yeah.
I'm still hoping he gets the Arizona Coyotes.
He submitted a $5.6 billion.
Gosh.
But I didn't realize he was that rich.
That's crazy. Yeah, that
but
is.
But he said he had to draw a line in the sand. Maybe he just came out and said that.
Right.
Right? Yeah. It's like, it'd be like you and I going, you know, we threw a bid in for $4.9 billion, but, hey, went up to $6 billion. We couldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I would do. I'm sorry my $4.8 billion deal was rejected by the Washington Commanders.
Come here, Coyotes. I'll buy you for $100 million.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I hope he does. I hope he buys that team.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, as we continue, we got Chris Harlow joining us in hour three. He's the TV play-by-play announcer of the Denver Nuggets. It continues our play-by-play announcer guest list that we've had. When do we have? Yesterday we had Kevin Ray and Kyle Draper? No, that
2 days
Wednesday.
Ago.
That was Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday.
Pat Donovan yesterday. To talk about the surging Rays, who did it, by the way.
Who did it again.
13-0. Came from behind to beat the Red Sox. So now they're treating every game like a playoff game, apparently.
Yes.
Now they don't want to lose.
And yet, you know, I can't help but notice that there's been a similar comparisons of that team to, you know, the good old days of the Montreal Expos.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Winning games and no one's
no
coming.
No one's there.
No one's no coming.
It's just.
You win 13 in a row, but nobody's there to see it. Does it make a sound? Oh, yeah, yeah. But they did it. They've now tied Milwaukee and the Atlanta Braves for the best start to a Major League Baseball season at 13-0. It's funny because a friend of mine posted on Facebook this morning. He goes, 2 weeks into the season, the Red Sox are already 8 games out. Too late? Yeah, it's too late. It's done. You're out.
What's their magic? What's the Rays' magic number,
yeah,
by
exactly.
the way?
Sorry. You're not coming back. Do the Rays feel like if they lose, they'll lose 10 in a row or something? Like, yeah, no, we're not done. We're not done. Everybody get out there and hit. No, there's no giving up today.
If they have a bad game, is the manager going to make them run foul pole to foul pole?
Exactly. Exactly. Good job, Tampa Bay. Well done. Well done.
It is. I mean, it is amazing because, you know, we're not stupid enough to sit there and go, yeah, 162-0, let's go. No. I mean, they're going to lose at least 50 games.
That's right. But they might win 110.
Right. that's the thing where, you know, you're just kind of sitting back and going like, how long can they do this? And what's the trend going to be? I mean, you know, yeah, they've won 13 in a row. Does that mean they're going to lose one? I mean, they're not going to go like on this huge losing streak.
Well, that's the thing. That's why I was saying, we were kind of talking about this yesterday. Okay, so you're not going to win the division. But you can lose the division, lose your chance at the division where you just can't catch up. Like I was saying with the Red Sox, they're 8 games back, right? Now, they've got games with Tampa. They'll have plenty of games against Tampa, but it's hard to – you got to – even if you win a series, even if you win a 3-game series, 2-1, you know, 2-1 or take 2 of 3, you've only gained one game in the standings. So you need to win series. They need to lose series. And in likelihood, it's you know, death by paper cuts. Like, you're not going to make up 8 games in 2 weeks. So if you're the Red Sox and you still think you'll win the division, you need them to lose a little more. Not a ton, but they just lose a little more. You need to win a little more. And then you hope at the end of May, you're like, okay, we got it down to 6. Then we got it down to 5. Then down the road. And then see what you are at the stretch run. But it's more likely that you're going to be 13, 14, 15 games back by Memorial Day. And then you're really in trouble. Now forget it. Memorial Day to me is always kind of the point where you go, what exactly do we have? That's about it. I know we still have 4 months left,
yeah.
Right? But that's a pretty good tell. You know, like it's where you find, like, I don't think that team's good. They're in last place. That team is really good. They're in first place. Then the middle is where you still have a lot of work to do in terms of analysis. But if you think the Kansas City Royals, for example, are going to be in last place in the division, they're likely going to be in last place by Memorial
right.
Day. By Memorial Day, they're likely to be 15 games out. You know, same thing with, like, the Pirates, who lost 100 games last year. If you think they're going to be last in the NL Central, that's probably where they'll be by Memorial
Day. What could be an outlandish number for the Rays by Memorial Day?
That's funny. That's a really good question. That's a really good question.
You know, let's see. We got what? How many weeks until Memorial Day? About 7, 8?
Oh, yeah. I was going to say it's a little. You're right. Well, no, it's next month. So what are we talking about?
But it's at, like, the end of the month.
End of.
So, I mean,
May.
Well, we're in the middle of April.
So 6 weeks?
We got about 6 weeks, okay? So on average, they play about 5 games a week.
Okay.
Right? But, I mean, just ballparking there about 5 games a week. They sometimes, you know, sometimes they'll do 6, but most of the time they have 5. So I'm just going to use 5 because make it easier if that's 30 games that they have left until Memorial Day.
Yeah.
I mean, are we seriously, how many losses in those 30 games? Like 3?
Yeah.
Maybe 5?
The best start in Major League history is the 1984 Detroit Tigers. They opened up the season after 40 games. So that's what, a month and a half?
Yeah.
They went 35-5.
That's incredible.
Like, that's nuts. That's almost unbeaten. In a way that you can compare it with baseball, with you losing at least 50 games, 35-5 is like going 15-1, 16-1
right, yeah.
in the NFL. It's like one of the more incredible starts you can have in baseball. 35-5 is nuts. That's what I'm going to watch this Rays team for, to see where they go in their next 27 games.
Yeah.
To see what they'll do. And if they go 22-5 in their next 27 games, this is going to be tying them for one of the greatest starts in baseball. If the greatest start in baseball history.
Yeah, because it'll be 35-5.
Right.
I mean, right. But right now it does seem kind of far-fetched to see them to really think that they can lose five games.
That's right. I know.
I don't know. I mean, yes, you know, we can point at the fact that I think they had an easy start.
Sure.
You know,
that's right. That's true.
And a lot of times, you know, we do the same thing on look when you compare it to the NFL. Remember when the Cardinals, what was that, last year or 2 years ago, had that really hot start with like 8-0, 9-0? And you really look at it, it's like, well, they haven't really played anybody.
That's
or
right.
Minnesota last year.
I think the same thing can be said. I think you're right. I think you're right that you should say about the Rays, look, okay, they played some easy teams. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. It doesn't mean they're bad. It doesn't mean their stats aren't real. It doesn't mean – it's that they played some very, very beatable teams in the way to start this season. But you know what? It's interesting. And again, is 13 games enough to give us a real analysis of a 162-game season? No. But this year, and I know we've been saying it all week, they are number one in runs, number one in batting average, number one in run differential, number one in ERA. Like, they're tops in every category. So they're beating you on offense and pitching. They're not doing it with just good pitching and winning games 2-1. They're doing it with a really good offense. And if the pitching doesn't really hold up, they'll beat you with the offense. And if the offense doesn't show up, the pitching beats you. Like, that's how they're winning 13 games. So it's not one thing that's working well. After 13 games, it's everything that's working
well.
Now, how long can you keep that up?
Now, here's the thing to look at, okay? They're 13-0. They tied the record. I don't know if they get 14. They have a really good series this weekend against the Blue Jays.
Blue Jays, yeah. Very strong team.
So that's good.
Yeah.
That will probably be where their first loss comes from. But then after that, I mean, you know, I don't know. They play the Reds. Are the Reds any good?
No.
White Sox?
All right.
Then they play the Astros, which that'll be a good series. And then the White Sox again to finish out the month of April. So I don't see a sweep coming. The problem is I don't see consecutive losses coming.
No, that's
I see
the
them
problem,
losing a game but then winning the next.
Right. What's interesting is that baseball can't sell you important series early in the season.
Right.
It can't do it. I remember when I was living in New Jersey, the Red Sox and the Yankees were playing a big series in May. And it was only because the Yankees were playing really, really well and the Red Sox were playing really well. And they were promoting this series on YES. You know, it's like a big series. But it never felt that way. It never felt that way. Like, you knew, like, in the end, it's like we have miles and miles to go before we sleep. And it just can't. So even when they play Houston, there's nothing to really extrapolate from them from that series. Even when they play the Yankees in early May, there's nothing to really take about that series as well. And when they go to New York in mid-May.
Although, do you think it'll be spun when they do play Houston? I'll catch this game.
Sure. Of course it will. There'll be
a playoff.
Is that a weekend series? I'm looking. No, it's a midweek series.
It's a midweek series.
Is there a Wednesday night baseball anymore? Are they doing that thing? No, they'll be in the middle of the NBA playoffs, so they ain't throwing baseball on in midseason. But they do have I'm looking at it now. They have a stretch from May 11th to May 18th where they're in New York for seven games. They have the Yankees for four and the Mets for three. I mean, if they go 4-3 during that stretch, that's going to be awesome.
Right.
Those are two very good teams. Right? But yeah, man, it's really been impressive. It's worth people's attention, even though there's 149 games left. Trying to do the math. Yeah, there's a lot of games left.
Telling you, Tony, 162-0.
But still,
mark my words.
Chris Arlo is going to join us next hour. We'll talk Denver Nuggets, the number one seed in the Western Conference, continuing to preview the NBA playoffs. And then, what does Lamar Jackson do now that everybody's on board and excited that Odell Beckham Jr. is with the Ravens? What would you do? We'll talk about that next in hour three as we continue with Wake Up Call.